second down, 30, going deep. And he's got his receiver, Adams! Slicing in for the touchdown.
Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
Play in big running room. And headed to the end zone is Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones.
Give that man the ball.
Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the least mature show on the Packers blogosphere. And none of you are going to know why. Because we are past the pre-show phase and we are into the real show phase. So this is where we're supposed to button up and act like we're professionals that know what the hell we're doing. Those of you that are still watching and hanging out with us, you guys know for the most part that's not the case. I'm your host this evening. It is the week of the Combine. I am Jacob Westendorf, and I am joined by a bit of a surprise, Paul Bredel. Paul is back this week. Paul, welcome back. I believe you worked today. It was your Sunday to work. So have you hit your quota of 3 days for the month?
Almost. Got to go back in tomorrow, but then after that, we should be good.
What a bummer. And I then know, we right? have some, we have an actual working man, the working class citizen, and the only person in this chat that was living for, as we record this on a Sunday, the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice.
That's right.
So, Jason, you were like a teenager, like late teenager when that happened. Do you remember where you were as the Miracle on Ice took place?
Yeah, I was running stadiums, man. I was getting ready for next season that I didn't make, that I got cut from the team for. So no, I don't, I mean, that was a long, long time ago. Many, 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 many gray hairs ago. They're all here and accounted for and present as well. So but, you know, cheers to the 1980 U.S. men's hockey team for sure. Great memory. Still haven't seen that movie. I'm like the only person on earth that hasn't seen Miracle.
Oh, well, then I would recommend go ahead and turn on ESPN right now. It's literally on as we're talking.
Got it.
So a few different things that are kind of interesting about that. Number one, the 1980 U.S. Olympic Miracle on Ice. And if you're watching this and don't know what that is, Google it. But essentially a team full of boys, amateurs, beat the Soviet Union men, the best team in the world that had won 4 straight gold medals and were looking for a fifth. They had beaten the team by a million goals the first time they played, and that team was able to win 4-3. It's the greatest moment in sports history. As far as I'm concerned, I don't know if there's a close second. And I honestly think it's in a class by itself. So if you want to talk first and second, that's fine. But it's kind of like when the Packers finish first in the NFC North and the second place team is the Minnesota Vikings. We know what the deal is. The Packers are the best team. Then there's a gap, and then there's those other three hanging out there. So there's that. Secondly, that movie came out when I was like 12. So, Jason, you haven't seen it yet. That was the first time some poor woman agreed to go on a date with me. And oof, that was our first date, was going to that movie. And, so that movie's a little special, I guess, in that regard.
Well, it had to be her idea, because as those of you out there who follow Jacob know, he's not a huge hockey fan.
No, I'm not. But Olympic hockey I do like. And
you like America too.
And I like America. I'm not a commie bastard, I guess. So this is positives again. Okay. If you guys are still here, that was 3.5 minutes of bullshit. So I apologize. Let's move forward into the news. The Packers actually have some news. Thank God we're in like the dullest portion of football news for the off season. I don't know if anybody's still watching the XFL. I kind of have it as some really nice background noise throughout the course of the weeks here, but otherwise I don't really care. Mason Crosby signed a 3-year extension that'll keep him in Green Bay through his age 38 season. Paul, you're the one, or Jason, I don't remember, one of you suggested bringing this up as far as news. And really the reaction was like, well, duh. Like, I mean, what is there a negative to this? He's going to be about a $4 million hit against the cap. Paul, is there any negative you could see in bringing back the kicker?
No, not at all. I mean, that's, I believe that's what his cap hit was the last few seasons under his previous contract. He has set a career high in his make percentage last season. And I asked the question, what's the alternative? I mean, we saw Sam Ficken in camp last year. He went to New York, hit 19 of 27 this season. So, I mean, he's a downgrade. So I don't know what the alternative is. Look at the Bears. Look at the Vikings. We don't want to mess with that. So, nope, worth every penny.
Right. I can understand to some degree, at least an argument of some cost effectiveness and wanting to pay a kicker, just some kicker, $1 million. The problem is some kicker sometimes is Cody Parkey, sometimes is Eddie Pinheiro, sometimes is just some random chud that can't put the ball through the uprights. And Paul, you got a little general there. I'll get specific. The Bears, and I was vocal and I was wrong. I'll say that here. If any Bears fans watch the show, here you go. I was wrong. When the Bears cut Robbie Gould, I was like, guys, it's a kicker. Like, I mean, honestly, who cares? Robbie Gould is as reliable as it gets. And the Bears kicking situation has been a dumpster fire ever since. And that's, Paul, when you're asking what's the alternative, that's pretty much what the alternative is. So, Jason, he took a cut in average annual value. But in terms of actual salary, cap hits, anything like that, is there anything that the Packers can't do now because they signed Mason Crosby?
No. The only issue that I have, and I'd take this problem over everything else that's good that comes out of it, is any waning leg strength, and can he still put it out of the back of the end zone, which he did a couple times last season, so it doesn't seem like that's an issue or a problem. Not to mention the kickoff seems to be a dying thing in the NFL anyway, so this was smart all around. So anybody out there who's shaking their head or disagreeing, shut up. No, just kidding. Don't. But really do. Yeah, this was the easiest first domino to fall, and then hopefully a couple others to follow. But this was some good news to kick off the week for sure.
Yeah, and there's examples, plenty of them, of Brian Gutekunst basically telling us all, we want Mason Crosby back. He's a part of what we're doing. He's a core of this team, all that stuff. Funny enough, I was at Mason Crosby's first game, and it's an impression that I will never forget. He banged in a 40-plus yard field goal as time expired to beat the Philadelphia Eagles that day. So that was a fun day, and he's going to get three more years. And obviously, one of the best moments in the history of this show was Jason and I going live after Mason Crosby banged in two bombs against the Dallas Cowboys in that divisional round. And shout out to my friend Vince Costa, who we dogpiled after the second kick that night. So that was a fun night. Again, it totally beats the alternative. A kicker, who was it? I think it was Mike Wendland, said, having a good kicker is like having a good lawyer. You never know that you or how good one is or until you need one or something. I can't remember exactly how it went. You never know how bad you want one until you need one or something like that. And I think that's a good way to put it, is that it's one of those things that you want. It's a position you want stability at. And I know that some people point to some of his struggles, but ultimately with me, if the game's on the line and Mason Crosby's trotting out there, I feel really good about the chances that ball's going through the uprights. So, Jason, you mentioned the kickoff potentially changing and going away. That kind of leads into our next bit of news here, which is the collective bargaining agreement. And I hate talking about players' unions and rich owners and billionaires arguing over why they should get more money than the players that they employ. But that's, to me, from the outside looking in, the labor agreement should be very simple. Guarantee the health care for the players and a 50-50 split of the pot. Because the owners, it's their business, so that's cool. But they assume basically no risk. The players are the ones that put their lives, their bodies, everything on the line for these teams and these games and our entertainment. To me, it should be that simple. For some stupid reason, it's not, and that's beside the point. The main talking points that I want to get into, because I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an economist, I'm not a doctor, as I often like to point out to Jason. So as we get through this, the two main points that we've gotten through are the extending of the schedule and the extending of the postseason. And I want to be brief on this, guys, because we really do, for our topic tonight, have a loaded one and probably one of the biggest needs on the Packers. So I definitely want to keep this as short as we can. But Paul, let me start with the proposal would be a 17-game schedule. Now, the logistics of it have not been laid out. To me, it would make sense to do 8 games at home, 8 games on the road, and guarantee an international game to every team with an extra bye week. That makes sense. there's been no discussion as to whether or not that is actually the case as the as how it would shake out. So logistically, I don't know how it would be, but it would be 17 games and three preseason games. Looking on your side, Paul, how do you think that that would be? Is that something you're in favor of? Is that something that you don't think would work?
Yeah, like you mentioned, the logistics are a huge part of it, and it's just such an unknown right now. I think ultimately I would be okay with it, and I saw Andy Herman tweet this out, as long as there's an extra bye thrown in. Every team would have two byes to help break up the season, because everything the NFL's done up to this point, you know, over the last 5-10 years, has been in the name of players' health, which as it should be. But to me, adding another game to that, even if it is, you know, they're taking away a preseason game. So I guess, you know, in the end, there's the same amount of football games being played. But let's not act like a preseason game, you know, especially for the starters, if it's the fourth one and they're sitting out versus a whole nother game to be played, or anything even close to each other. So I would be okay with it as long as there is a second bye week thrown in for the NFL teams. And then, yeah, whether it's an international game, or there'd have to be a way to figure that out, the logistics of it, you know, because one team has 9 home games, another team has 8, only 8. Obviously, that's going to cause some discrepancies and, you know, potentially in the records.
Right, in the records. And I know from a revenue standpoint, somebody had said that basically what they would do is, if you hosted 2 preseason games, then you would not get the extra home game in the regular season. But to me, that puts the postseason on an uneven playing field. Because say the Packers and the Vikings, that's not a good example. The Packers and the Rams are fighting for a postseason spot, and the Rams get 9 home games and the Packers only got 8, and the Rams finish 1 game better. And really the difference could be the fact that, yeah, the Rams played 9 games at home instead of that extra game on the road. Jason, you've been around the longest. You remember the Lombardi era Packers. So, I mean, the game has evolved quite a bit since that time, but what are your thoughts here on potentially expanding the schedule?
Hey, I voted to keep the team in Green Bay in the 20s.
I tell you look great for your age, man.
What do I do here? I got the, you know, there's still some darks up there. That's all natural, baby.
I think that is Elaine Watson keeping you young is what that is.
Well, unfortunately, she is going gray as a result of having that task.
No argument here.
She'll enjoy listening back to this afterwards. So I don't know. I just don't feel like it's been thought through. So I'm not a huge fan of the proposal. And I also happen to agree with the idea that this being thrown out there so quickly just kind of seems a little shady. So if they've got a better explanation for it and how they're going to do it, that's fine. As far as 17 games, I haven't warmed up to that idea yet. And, you know, someone made a joke about, I don't remember who it was, about the OCDs in the world who are going to lose their minds now because there's an odd number of games. Even
Jennifer Shore Westendorf being one of them.
Yes.
My beautiful mother.
which creates some other issues. And as far as the playoffs go, you take away that bye week from the number 2 seed. I don't like that at all. So there's some things for them to work through and figure out. I mean, we may all ultimately have to get used to it and learn to like it. But as it stands right now, I'm not a big fan of either of them. I don't have a problem with the Packers playing an international game. I think they've gotten very fortunate that they haven't had to deal with the rigors and the downsides that come with traveling overseas, playing a game, having your bye week, you know, affected that way. So I wouldn't be opposed to or complain about that necessarily, especially if everyone's having to do it. But yeah, I don't love it.
My complaint with the international game would be the last time the Packers played a football game on not U.S. soil. They played on an 80-yard field, and it was terrible. So there's that. Jason, you mentioned the expansion of the postseason. I'm 100% against it. I think that I know that the Mike Florios of the world immediately pointed out that last year the first round of the playoffs would have been the Chiefs against the Steelers and the Packers against the Rams. And those were two pretty good matchups. If you can overlook the fact that Duck Hodges was going to be the starting quarterback in a playoff game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That being said, I always want, one, the regular season to matter. And I think that adding another playoff game kind of devalues it a little bit. And I also think that, listen, there's a lot of good things that the NBA does. Marketing its stars, the All-Star games, save for the debacle in China this year. Whenever there's a PR issue, they seem to handle that pretty well under Adam Silver. That being said, from an on-the-court, on-the-field standpoint, no sport should aspire to be like the NBA at all. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but half the teams in the NBA make the playoffs. And I know, this because I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan and I'm the example that everyone points to, but for every 2007 Golden State Warriors, most of your first round matchups are 4 or 5 game warmups. Where I remember a year where Cleveland was the one seed when LeBron was there, and Kyrie Irving didn't even play in the first round. Like, I mean, it's just a walkthrough. That's all it is for some of that stuff. I have no desire to see half of the NFL teams making the playoffs. I actually would be a proponent of shrinking the postseason if that were. Now, I know that will never happen, but if it could, I would be a proponent of it. But I'm okay right where it is. Six playoff teams is fine. You still have the chance for teams like the Giants and the Packers and the Steelers, those teams that were wild card teams that made runs to the Super Bowl. And you got those two teams with a bye. I think a 2 seed has earned that. And I think that I'm okay with 16 games. I'm a big proponent of, if it's not broke, do not fix it. And I feel like the NFL is trying to fix something that frankly isn't broken. And not only that, Jason, you mentioned the 2 seed losing its bye. I know a lot of it's kind of crazy because I think 2013 when the Broncos and the Seahawks played each other, it was the first time in a long time that both number one seeds had played in the Super Bowl. And that's crazy. And now it seems like that happens almost every year. And I think that would be even more so. That number one seed would be insanely valuable because you're the only team that gets a bye. You'll still play the lowest seeded team. And by the time you get to the conference championship game, you'll have played a team that is, you're guaranteed to play a game against a team that's only played 2 games or already played 2 games to get there. So 100% against expanding the postseason. But Paul, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, the reason the NFL will do it and ultimately it's going to get passed is because, well, on wild card weekend, when there's 3 games on Saturday and 3 games on Sunday, guess where my ass is going to be parked? Mm-hmm. Right in front of that television, watching all 3 of those games. So, Paul, anything real quick on the potential playoff expansion before we move on?
No, you guys hit on the head perfectly. I am very much against it. I would vote for, you know, reducing the number of playoff teams before I'd ever even consider thinking about expansion. So, no, I dislike that idea. But like you said, people tune in and the almighty dollar rules just about everything nowadays.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that it is that way because ultimately it waters down the competitive levels. It's the same reason you see expansion in all the sports. It's why baseball is talking about expanding their postseason, which I also think is asinine. So we'll move forward. We got a big topic this week, guys. It's the wide receiver position. I think that all of us can safely say that the receiver position this year was Devontae Adams. And both of you, on the count of three, were the Packers better without Devontae Adams? 1, 2, 3.
No.
No, thank you. Okay. Packers weren't better without Devontae Adams. Get that idea out of your head. 2, Alan Lazard was a nice little addition through the year, a pleasant surprise, if you will. And he's really the only thing that saves this group from being a complete F after Adams. Lazard is a nice player. I think he's somebody that can be part of their future. And we're going to talk about what the Packers need and how they're going to address this position. Brian Gutekunst, very similar to what he told you about Mason Crosby. He said that will, quote, be a position we look to add to. It's a position they look to add to at the trading deadline this past season. And lo and behold, according to most draft experts, the receiver position is the deepest one going into this draft class. So that's good news for the Packers, because the free agent class can leave a little to be desired. There's some acquired tastes in there, and we can talk about those as we get closer to free agency. But, Jason, of the receivers this year, which guy was the most disappointing, do you think, from start to finish?
It's The conversation centers around it's either Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Geronimo Allison, because and then you have to decide which one was, you know, performed worse to expectations. I think for me, Geronimo Allison playing poorly maybe was just a matter of time catching up with him, and he had a couple of good years and he benefited from some great quarterback play. But Marquez Valdes-Scantling was supposed to step up and be that guy that was going to take some heat off of Adams, give us some deep threat on the other side, and he just did not do a darn thing. And then losing EQ in that terrible game in Canada that you mentioned earlier didn't help at all, because then that's one less guy that knows the offense, and then they had to rely on, you know, who they thought was going to be Darius Shepherd. Shepherd was not the answer. He ended up back on the practice squad. Fortunately, Alan Lazard stepped up. So for me, it's probably, I say MVS just because of what they wanted him to be, but Geronimo Allison, if you want to talk about overall, Geronimo Allison had the worst season out of all the guys that played any kind of significant minutes. So it's those two. But I think GMO, from an overall perspective, was worse.
Yeah, my biggest complaint with Allison was that the same when they re-signed him, he's not somebody that should be your second wide receiver. And I think that they asked too much from him to begin with. It's the same, you know, when we got to the trading deadline, and everybody mocked the Packer, you know, Packers fans that wanted another receiver were complaining that Green Bay didn't trade for a receiver. Okay, the problem I have is not that they didn't trade for one. The problem that you have is that they were right. I think they were right not to trade for a receiver. The mistake they made was in March, where they counted on Geronimo Allison, undrafted free agent, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, fifth round, Equanimee St. Brown, sixth round, and undrafted dudes after that. I think that was their biggest mistake. Paul, one of the big questions going into 2020 is how many of these dudes can you say that, like, for example, on the offensive line, Green Bay doesn't need, quote unquote, to draft a left tackle because they have David Bakhtiari in place. How many guys do you think in this receiving core are guys that they can count on to be part of their 2020 receiver corps and be reliable contributors?
Off the top of my head, two, Devontae and Alan Lazard. You know, Geronimo's an unrestricted free agent. I don't see why the need would be to bring him back. He struggled with drops, had fumbles. The Fleur kept putting him in positions where, you know, get him on wide receiver screens to make plays, but that's just, he's just not dynamic. You know, as their primary slot receiver, he just struggled and fumbled the whole season away. So I don't know why he would be back. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I'm hoping he can rebound, but obviously there's no guarantee. Equanimee St. Brown, we know Aaron Rodgers loves him, but spent the whole year injured. Do we really know what we have in him or how reliable, you know, he's going to be moving forward? No. I mean, obviously we hope that he is, but there's no certainty in that. And then there's Jake Kumerow. I mean, even with all the issues that they had this season, he still struggled to see playing time, even with Valdes-Scantling snap count going down, the issues that Allison had. So, I mean, off the top of my head, you know, obviously Devontae Adams is in a class of his own. Lazard, you know, he became one of Rodgers' favorite targets on third down, and he developed that trust that we know is key with Rodgers, and something that, as we've seen, especially in recent years, just doesn't get formed with all the receivers. So I would say that those two are the only ones that we can, you know, truly count on moving forward. Now, that doesn't mean that MVS and EQ are going to be cut or they won't be on the squad next year, but I think looking ahead, you plan, all right, we can work with these two. Obviously Devontae is the one, but Lazard, as good as he was, you know, I think he's better. You don't necessarily want him as your number two receiver either. You know, if he's the third or fourth option, then you're doing pretty well. So I think those are the two that I would kind of rely on. All right, here's where we're going into 2020 with. Now let's add some pieces to complement them.
Yeah, I'm there with you guys. I think that Adams is there, obviously. I've been in his corner since the end of 2015 when people wanted him cut for Jeff Janis. And all the way through, obviously. Now I'm not nothing. It was more than one person. There was one person who was very, very vocal about it, but it was more than one person. There were a lot of people that were not fans of Devontae Adams. There was one of the beat writers, I can't remember which one, wrote a story that said, I would bet Janis as the starting receiver because of his speed. And obviously that didn't happen with Nelson and Cobb. It became Devontae Adams. So him, obviously, Lazard, I'm with you, and I've been a proponent of, you know, sign a guy, find a reliable, under the radar, quote unquote, if you will, free agent. The Packers aren't signing Amari Cooper. Let's just get that idea out of the way now. Sign a guy, find a vet, and draft two guys, and we'll get to that here in a moment. One thing I do want to touch on, though, is Equanimeous St. Brown, because that seems to be the thing that everybody's talking about is, you know, don't forget about EQ. And I understand that. I had EQ as a top 100 player on my personal draft board going into that season. When they got him in the sixth round, I was ecstatic because I said I would have picked him in the third round and it would have been great. The problem here is this, guys, and I know he had a pretty good year, his rookie season, all things considered. And one of the arguments is, well, Aaron Rodgers likes him. Paul, you brought that up. Well, Aaron Rodgers also likes Geronimo Allison. That doesn't mean the guy can play, quite frankly. Two, the last game EQ played in was December 31st, 2018. That is a really long time ago. Well, I should say the last game of consequence, preseason games, whatever. And this offseason, huge year. Everybody except for Adams pretty much on a clean slate. Because it's a new offense and some opportunities to do things. And there are things in St. Brown's skill set that could fit Matt LaFleur's offense very well. And he was running in quad three and quad four of your wide receivers. He was, before he got hurt, he was running with guys like T.O. Redding and Jamon Moore and just the dudes that were roster fodder and going to get cut. I have long believed, and I still do believe this, that Packers Twitter and Packers draft analysts, and maybe to some degree the quarterback, like EQ more than the actual team does. Because he was very much behind the other guys his rookie season. And going into last season, there was a pretty good chance he was going to get cut. And putting him on injured reserve before the season starts tells me that they believe in his talent, but they wanted to cut him. I mean, if you guys really look at it, they kept Darius Shepherd as their sixth receiver. They wanted to keep Alan Lazard. They thought enough of him to bring him up as a seventh receiver before anybody even got injured. EQ was wide receiver eight. Now, teams don't keep eight wide receivers. That just doesn't happen. So I would say advise caution, and he's not somebody that I would bring up when discussing potential contributors. He would be a out-of-nowhere type, if you will. Jason, real quick, what are your thoughts on St. Brown going into 2020?
Yeah, give him an opportunity to compete in camp, but you'll figure out right away pretty quickly if he's going to be in the mix or not. But I think the Packers need to address this offseason as if he's not there, mm-hmm. and as if they need to replace, you know, they basically need to go into this draft as if they've only have one receiver, like you said. So, you know, St. Brown, great story, great potential, and if he works out, great, but you're looking for your two and three guys, so it's really kind of inconsequential at this point.
Paul, I kind of want to get your theory on this, too. It's something that I think is interesting because we really did it this past offseason, too, with fifth, sixth, seventh-round receivers. Think about it this way. We're not going into, as fans, Twitter analysts, whatever you want to call us, we're not going into 2020 saying, Ty Summers, seventh round pick, could be a contributor at inside linebacker next season. Or Kadar Holman, sixth round corner, could be a dude that they stick in there. Why is it that we do that with wide receivers? Because really going into last season, we talked ourselves, now granted, some of that is fandom, and I understand that. But we talked ourselves into Geronimo Allison, UDFA, Alan Lazard, UDFA, St. Brown, sixth round. Jamon Moore, fourth round. Okay, so he was a little bit of a higher pick, but he stunk. MVS, fifth round. Why do we talk ourselves into receivers more than we do some of the other positions?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it just has to do with, you know, we don't like the Ty Summers, an inside linebacker, you know, for just sitting on our couch and watching at home. Most eyes aren't going to be fixated on the inside linebacker. It's going where the ball is. You know, we see receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, you know, those are the ones that are making the big plays for the most part over the course of a football game. And then I think just in general, especially the Packers fan base, I think we just tend to gravitate towards individual players for whatever that reason is. There's always, you know, a few. I know, like this past summer, Darius Shepherd, you know, was one of them in camp where he just became a darling of everyone because in practice he makes a few plays, he plays hard, you know, he's from NDSU, so 1AA FCS, so a little smaller, maybe a chip on his shoulder. So he's just an easy guy to root for. And St. Brown, he was a great value in the draft, like you said, Jacob. But if they go into this season expecting him to contribute, that's how you get into what happened in 2019. You know, you go in with a Equinemius, a Geronimo, a Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and then if things go wrong, you shouldn't really be surprised. You go in with them, you give them a shot, and you hope that something pans out because he did show some playmaking ability in that 2018. He had some flashes, you know, looking here, he averaged almost 16 yards a catch. Small sample size, but still that's a good chunk of yardage per play. So I just think you know, it's an easy position to watch. You see him make plays, and I think it's just easier to gravitate towards those kind of positions that we just see more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's interesting. Shepherd's a great example. I think that, you know, we get caught up in the stories and then we kind of forget that there is value to guys making plays. Obviously, Darius Shepherd made the roster because he made a play every single day in camp. But then you got to remember, too, that some of the guys they're playing against are currently playing in the XFL or bagging groceries or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. Nowadays, they're not playing against Darius Slay and, you know, some of the primetime players that are in this division, just for example, and in the NFL as a whole. So Packers need to get more talented at wide receiver, and let's get into that right now, guys. Here's the simplest and easiest question. What round, Jason, if any, are you looking for the Packers to draft a wide receiver?
Any. I mean, it could be any round. I mean, they could go round one. I'd love that because it would break mold from, you know, I mean, I'm probably just forgetting. I mean, I think Javon Walker, if I'm not mistaken,
You're
was
correct.
Javon Walker. The last time that they spent a first-round pick, I mean, I was going to go back to Sterling Sharp, which is, you know, this, of course, for the old guy. But, yeah, Javon Walker, 2002, 2001. So that was a long time ago. So if they want to actually put some capital and draft some, you know, put some actual, like, hardcore draft capital into this thing, and it could even be early in two because they trade back. Because I'm looking at the list here, and there's just a, you know, as we've heard over and over again ad nauseum, there's a huge list of guys. It's a very deep draft class for wide receivers, and we're a week away from the combine. I cannot wait to see how some of these guys test and how things kind of shake and move in the combine 1 week from now. We'll be able to talk about it, you know, 1 week from today. So, I mean, if they want an impact guy, they're going to draft two guys that are going to come in, and assuming they're going to sign a veteran, and they need to draft those two guys no later than the fourth round. If you go past that, then they're right back to where they were before, Jake. Like you mentioned, you're relying on fifth, sixth, seventh rounders to come in and make an impact, and that just has obviously not proven to be effective. So it's got to be one through four at the very latest, and then you're still crossing your fingers, I think, on a fourth-round guy.
So there's that. Paul, first of all, I think that I can safely say that you can start as early as the first round in looking for receivers. How many guys would you like to see them come out of this draft with? So I kind of want to change, I guess, that first question that we've typically answered a little bit. But how many guys would you like to see, in a perfect world, how many guys do they draft at the receiver position and bring to camp?
Well, as of now, they have 10 draft picks. So I'm just going to take trades out of the equation just because that just adds a whole new element to this. I'm going to go with three, though. And honestly, I would like to see two in the first four rounds. So whether that's a first and a fourth, a second and a third, however the board falls and they draw it up, that's what I would like to see. And then in the sixth round or fifth round, obviously at that point, a lot of it's just value, but I'd like to see one more piece added at that point. So that's three receivers. And if they can find a free agent as well, I honestly wouldn't mind that. And I don't mean a Robbie Anderson and Amari Cooper, you know, maybe like an ascending Rashad Perryman or a Tajay Sharp who played with the Fleur in Tennessee. Guys are going to come in with modest price tags because this position really needs an infusion of talent. And I expect Gutekunst to address it aggressively. We saw last year Edge needed an overhaul. What did he do? Two free agent signings, took Rashawn Gary. Safety needed an overhaul. Drafted Darnell Savage, signed Adrian Amos. Inside line or interior line, signed Billy Turner, drafted Elton Jenkins. So I think that we'll see that kind of aggressiveness for him. But what I'm looking for ideally, and a big part of it is how does the board fall, is two wide receivers within those first four rounds. But having said that, I don't necessarily think it has to be a first rounder because the wide receiver class is so deep. I think that they can get, you know, a really good player and a contributor right out the gates at 62 if that's how the first round ends up going for him.
Yeah, I'm a proponent every, and I say this every year when it comes to the draft, and that is do not marry yourself to one position at the pick. Because if you mm-hmm. do that, like for example, if let's say Brian Bulaga walks, and I know I'm going to hear this, somebody's going to say, well, they have to pick a tackle in the first round now. No, they don't. Because if you have a C-plus tackle available and a B-plus wide receiver, you take the B plus wide receiver because he's the better player. I mean, it's just unfortunate that that's not as understood as maybe it should be. And then you got to kind of, you know, figure out ways later. But the other reality is, like you said, Paul, I mean, the draft is, you know, four or five rounds, but you can get good players in any of those rounds. To address the question specifically, yes, I think the Packers can start looking at receiver as soon as pick number 30. And I think that I'm right there with you guys. In the first four rounds, I'd like to see two guys drafted. And, Paul, I'm with you at the end to find a lottery ticket in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, somebody that you can – maybe something cool happens. Maybe it's a guy who fell because of an injury or a character concern that you're comfortable with or something like that. But finding somebody later that can contribute to the team somehow or at minimum – pushes the back end of the receiver room, such as the guys like MVS, St. Brown, whoever it is that they decide to bring back. So that one's pretty simple. Pick number 30 is as soon as they can start looking at it. So let's start with who are some of the popular guys in that round. And I think, guys, what we can do is I hate the, well, they won't be there conversation because last year, Jakai Polite was never going to make it to pick number 12, and he's out of the NFL after being picked in the third round. So in general, that conversation is pretty stupid. However, I am going to eliminate CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy from this conversation just because I don't picture a scenario, save for a failed drug, and most of the scenarios that would help them fall are to things where Green Bay wouldn't pick them anyways, like failed drug tests, character concerns, stuff like that. But Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, out of the conversation for that reason. After that, so who are some of the popular guys in that round? Jason, who are some guys that have caught your attention that are popular in, let's just say, the first two rounds?
I don't know how long of a list, because we've got a lot of talent. So for me, if they've got a chance,
like two of your favorite guys.
So, well, two of the favorite, I mean, Henry Ruggs, if Ruggs is there, you know, and I know I've typically tended to be a big Alabama prospect fan in the past, but if Ruggs is there, then I'm absolutely happy with that. I'm maybe curious to see how he does at the combine, but then it gets interesting because Packer Report and your guy, Ross Uglum's guy, Laviska Shenault from Colorado. You know, he's got an interesting kind of a skill set. He's almost similar to another one of your guys in Peoples Jones in that he was kind of the victim of falling off that. No one really heard a lot about him until Ross mentioned his name, because Colorado doesn't have a great team and they don't have a great offense. So he's, you know, he could be intriguing, but I'm going to get a little bit biased here and I'm going to say, and you know, I did the thing. I watched the film and I watched a lot of him play this season. And Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State, the one thing I like about him, the reason why I like him, is that the stuff that he's not great at right now, I think is very fixable and very trainable, but he does the dirty work. You know, he's willing to get downfield and block. He's actually a good blocking wide receiver, and he's very versatile. So he's somebody that can help return kicks as well. So I don't know why you don't consider that if you're talking about early prospects. So if it's me, my one is Ruggs. My two would be Ayuk.
Okay. Paul, is there anybody he didn't mention that you think should be in conversation? Otherwise, who are some guys that are popular?
Well, from the Packers perspective and me as a fan, I would love to see what LaFleur could do with Laviska Shenault. I know Jason touched on him, but he did, you name it at Colorado and he probably did it. And I just think that that would be great to see in this offense. But a couple other names, Jalen Reagor from TCU. He's a vertical threat. Get the ball in his hands and just let him go to work. Dynamic talent. He would just give this offense, you know, an ability that they didn't really have last season. And then the other one I would look at is T. Higgins, if he's still available. You know, he would just be that prototypical deep threat, that vertical passing game that would get, you know, what the Packers had hoped Marquez Valdes-Scantling was going to turn into. You know, this is the juiced up, ready to go, you know, make plays type Julio Jones kind of player. So I think he could do this offense a lot of good as well.
Yeah, T. Higgins, some guy that I've seen him compared to and I like it is A.J. Green. And I'm not sure how wild I am about the Packers paying current A.J. Green, but if pick number 30 is T. Higgins, I'm very happy with that potential selection. You guys touched on Chenault. I like him too. Kind of a, I think the way Ross compared him was, imagine if Cordarrelle Patterson was good. I think that's a good way to look at him. The value in the return game is something that intrigues me a little bit. I know the Packers have Tyler Irvin, and he did some good stuff for the team, but I do think that that's a position, having more than one guy at one, too, and having somebody that's potentially a little explosive there. Paul, you mentioned Jalen Reagor. That's one. One name I'm surprised didn't come up from either one of you guys is Justin Jefferson out of LSU, and he's somebody who – at times looks like Devontae Adams. I don't like him as much as some people do, but there are people that have him listed as high as wide receiver number three behind Judy and CeeDee Lamb, and I won't go that rich, but he's a very good player. He could be a big slot for Green Bay right away. Those are some guys that I like there. KJ Hill, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and then I'll save one for here in a little bit because I've been the president of this guy's fan club since the middle of October. But I'll leave that alone for just a moment because there is another question that leads into that. Guys, who's your favorite player at this position, period? So of all the guys we mentioned and the guys that are disqualified, Jason, you kind of mentioned Henry Ruggs. So is he your favorite player at this position, period?
I'm going to stick with Ayuk just because of the versatility and the blocking. And, you know, I miss some of that stuff that Jordy used to do. And, you know, if any chance we can get to replace some of that stuff would be helpful in this offense. Cause the wide receiver yak is, I mean, obviously they don't have a lot of talent. They haven't had a lot of it there, but one of the reasons why is because, you know, you don't have some of that skill set. So, I mean, I'll stick with Ayuk, even though he's not obviously number one on my list.
Okay, so that's not just homerism either, guys. Ayuk is a player, and he's somebody I've watched myself as well, and I like the versatility and some of that stuff too. So, Paul, who's your favorite player at the position, period?
Laviska Shenault, like I kind of alluded to earlier. Okay. I'd really like to see him in this Packers offense, move all over the field, line up anywhere. One of those guys, once again, you put the ball in his hands, and he can make plays after the catch. You know, I just think that would be a much – you know, needed element to this offense. If you could have, you know, Devontae, you know, and what he does as a tactician, you got Lazard as kind of a bigger possession receiver. Hopefully, you know, if they could add someone else in free agency and then that skill set that Chenault can bring to this team, I think it's just different, unique. And I think that, you know, that skill set could really be exploited in this offense with LaFleur and Rodgers at quarterback.
I got you. T. Higgins is my, this question basically is who's your wide receiver three? And mine is T. Higgins, and I mentioned him before. But my favorite player and who I've been the president of this guy's fan club since October is KJ Hamler. And I'm going to bang this drum, and I know the Packers won't have them on him, probably won't have him on their board. They typically don't like shorter receivers. That's fine. I don't care how tall he is. There is speed, and there is KJ Hamler speed. And watching him run, it's just a completely different gear. It doesn't matter who he was playing against. He ran away from all of them. The idea of putting him in the slot, his change of direction is great. Those jet sweeps to him would be great. He'd be a good kick returner, a good punt returner immediately. He's a second to third round pick, and I think that would be a home run type player for the Packers if they could get him in that range. Because, yeah, he is going to fall because he's a little bit shorter, but his speed level is just there. Let's go with undervalued guys. Who's some of your more undervalued players? Mine, Jason, you mentioned him earlier. I'm going to talk about him, and I think he's somebody who's going to rise after the combine. But the only guys I've seen that are ranking him highly are myself and Jacob Morley, and that's Donovan Peoples-Jones, DPJ for short. And I think that one of the biggest reasons for that is, one, he played in a run-heavy offense at Michigan. Two, he's a former five-star recruit and doesn't have the production levels to go with that, largely because of the offense. And three, he suffered from this really – it's a traumatic disease, guys, and it affects receivers everywhere, and I really want to spread the awareness. It's known as shitty QB-itis, and it really is. It's a tough one.
He did. Yeah.
It's tough. And I would advise you all, for those that say Peoples-Jones sucks from watching this previous year's tape, I implore you to watch his 2018 tape, because he was the team's big play receiver in 2018. This past year, the offense just kind of fell apart, but he still has some opportunities. He's a fluid athlete, and I think he's going to blow up the combine. There are people listing him as a fourth, fifth rounder. Green Bay could pick him at 62, their second round pick, and I would be fine. Jason, yeah. You're shaking your head, so you can feel free to piggyback on if you'd like that, but is there somebody you're seeing that's undervalued at this position?
All right, so this one's going to be a head-scratcher because we've heard his name a lot, but as far as undervalued, to me, Tyler Johnson out of Minnesota is – I mean, the reason I say undervalued is because if you're picking – if he falls to three or later, that's bizarre to me. Well, Peoples-Jones. Peoples-Jones to me is round two talent. You know, easily. So I agree with you there. He had, you know, there were some really, really embarrassing moments for Patterson this past season where he just did not get the ball in the right spot.
Most of them are against Ohio State, but
right. Well, and to be fair, you know, insert every year, you know, copy paste. But I say Tyler Johnson just because there's some talk about him being a third, fourth rounder. I don't know. I mean, again, a versatile skill set. He's a guy that can probably play some special teams in return for you too. So to me, it's you know, a very clear day two guy that I'm hearing could fall to day three, and I just don't see it. So for me, it's Tyler Johnson out of Minnesota.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, there were discussions today he's not going to run at the combine because his goal is to nail his 40 time, and it doesn't matter when. But that being said, he's one of those guys that I don't know how well he'll test, but he's going to be one of those dudes that whatever team drafts him, they're just going to smile and say thank you about it. Mm-hmm. Paul, who's undervalued here at the spot?
I hate to be doing the same thing, but my guy was Tyler Johnson as well. I think that if the Packers in that, you know, first or second round, if they could get a T. Higgins, Jalen Reagor, Donovan Peoples-Jones, KJ Hamler, and then top that off with potentially, you know, Tyler Johnson, who's going in the third or fourth round of a lot of mock drafts, I think that would be an absolute home run for them. He's got 40-plus games of experience at Minnesota. Super, super good, refined route runner, and he'd step in, could make an impact from the slot for this Packers team. Also has very reliable hands as well. So that was my guy, not to duplicate or copy Jason at all, but another one as well is Van Jefferson, kind of similar. He's got got the experience, solid route runner, good hands as well.
No Cephas from Paul. That's incredible.
You know what, though? Later, when we're talking about lottery tickets, if he's a guy available in the fifth, sixth round all day long, twice on Sundays.
Absolutely.
Van Jefferson, of course, named after the great Van Wilder, which is one of my favorite movies that has ever been made. So I enjoy the pick there. I don't know if he was actually named after Van Wilder, guys, for those of you that don't get my sarcasm. Normally, here is when I ask you guys, what's the likelihood that they take a player with their first, you know, five picks in the first five rounds? The number is 100%. Brian Gutekunst has told us all that's just how it is. So what I want to do is kind of twist this a little bit. Of the top guys, is there anybody that you guys think is on bust watch? Is there somebody that people are really talking about, talking them up, and Paul, you're just thinking, I don't really see it?
Good question. Oof. I don't know that I have anyone off the top of my head. The one thing that I will say about like Justin Jefferson, for example, is just how much he played out of the slot at LSU. He was obviously fantastic from there, all 18 of his touchdowns. He had over 1,500 yards in receiving this season, which most of them came from the slot. But at the NFL level, especially in the LaFleur offense where you want to move guys around, just want to see if that can be something that he can incorporate into his game more so than just being, you know, labeled as a slot guy. So I don't necessarily think that, you know, is a major concern, but that's something that's popped up for me.
Jason, anybody?
I mean, I don't know. I've heard that there's some questions about how well Jerry Jeudy's going to test at the combine, but that's not playing football. So I don't know that I want to put what a lot of people are saying is the number consensus number two best receiver in this draft on that list. One guy that I just don't, you know, love the tape of, and I think he's probably further down on the list than you're talking about, Jake, but Mike Pittman Jr.
Oh yeah,
out of USC. You know, I don't think he's projected to go very highly. I think he's getting a lot of play because he went to USC, and congratulations. That's a, you know, a great football program. He's got great size at 6'4". I don't know if he's going to translate to the pro game, but again, he is probably going to end up getting drafted in a place where if he doesn't succeed, it's not going to be as shocking as if it was a Jeudy or a Higgins, for example.
Yeah. Pittman is one that I found interesting. Some people like him a lot more than others. I like him if you can get him towards the end of day two, early day three. Watching him play, and this is probably just because I watch a lot of Packers football, but he reminds me of Alan Lazard. Big, not the fastest, good body control, can make contested catches, stuff like that. I want to preface when I bring up my bust watch that I'm not saying I think this guy's going to be a bust. I just think the potential is there, and that is Laviska Shenault out of Colorado. And I think that because we see it all the time. NFL teams try and fit square pegs into round holes and don't ask players to do what they're good at. Instead, they try and make them fit something that they aren't. For example, if some team last year drafted DK Metcalf and wanted him to be this precise route runner and do all those kinds of things, he would have failed. Ask him to run slants, ask him to run goes and inbreakers. He's good at that. Shenault. Have a specific plan for him early to get the ball in his hands on some gadget-type plays. Play him at running back, play him in the slot, hand him the ball on jet sweeps, throw him some bubbles, stuff like that. But again, asking him to run the entire route tree from his rookie season, I'm sure there's some team that will ask him to do that if they draft him. And I think that they'll be disappointed if that happens. And if that happens, so much of this guy's a situation. You guys know that as well as anybody. I just mentioned Donovan Peoples-Jones playing victim to being in a bad offense with a bad quarterback. That can happen to Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, you know, whoever your top guy is, for example. There are plenty. DeAndre Hopkins was that way for years, playing with the likes of Brock Osweiler and Matt Schaub. And now finally he's got Deshaun Watson, who's an MVP level player, to showcase some of his talent. So there's going to be a lot. The wide receiver position is going to be looked at a lot. I look forward to it because I really think the best news, and I don't know if you guys agree with this or not, but I really do think that there's a wide range of options for the Packers to draft, and it's almost impossible for them to screw it up and pick the wrong guy, essentially. I think that is the best part about this deal. That could lead them to pick a receiver a little bit later than maybe what some people are hoping, but I also know that there are some people hoping that they trade their entire draft for Jerry Jeudy, assuming that's going to fix this team. So that's something I would advise strongly against. If there's anything that I've learned watching football, is you're never one wide receiver away from winning a championship. So that's the case, but I think it's going to be hard for them to not get somebody that can contribute to this team. And there's a lot of guys that can fit what Green Bay needs in a lot of different ways. And I think you're going to see a completely different wide receiver room next year, and it'll be for the better. We will be back next week talking tight ends with Jake Morley from Packer Report. He will be live at the Combine. And for those of you that know that are paying attention, I am writing for the Cheesehead TV draft guide, the tight ends section. So next week could be an interesting one. Kind of a sneaky need for the Packers. It's not a need like receiver or a linebacker or defensive line or something like that. But, and we'll get into this conversation next week. So I don't want to kill it all here now. But that's what we'll have next week. After the combine, to kind of get some reaction on that kind of stuff and go through everything like that. But today was receivers. We had a lot to talk about, so we went through everything, and that's going to end this version of the show. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel. It's Pulse of the Pack. Hit a subscriber and let us know what you think about these shows. You can follow Jason on Twitter. He's at Jason Perrone. And as I mentioned earlier, he was at the Miracle on Ice, 20 years old at the time. And you can follow Paul Breddle when he's not working, which is almost never. He tweets pretty frequently. at Paul underscore Brettle. You can find him at Dairyland Express, Cheesehead TV, and pretty much the Packers around the internet. And then you can find me. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. I'm the most sophisticated one of these scoundrels, and that's where we're at. And as I mentioned last week, well, first of all, you can find my work over at Packer Report, at Packer Report 66. And if you want to follow Human Garbage, it's at Astros on Twitter. Thank you guys very much, and go Pack, go.
Of the Pack Podcast.